Tom, thanks for joining us on Full Story.
Nor, always nice to be on the pod. Thank you.
Before we talk about Australia's broader response to the war, Australia is now joining 40 or so nations to discuss freedom of navigation in the Strait of Hormuz, led by the UK and France. Is it clear, Tom, what they intend to achieve?
It's not clear. It's early in the week. This summit, the second meeting of this group, is planned for the end of the week. The UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer announced that move on Tuesday Australian time. The project seems to be an international group ready to go to promote freedom of navigation, particularly in the Strait, once a ceasefire is agreed in Iran and once hostilities de-escalate, to use the military terminology or the political terminology, I guess. And the idea is that there'll be an international coalition with some of the big European powers, because there's a bit of tension between the US President Donald Trump in particular, and some of America's traditional allies. So I think it's kind of an adjacent project to the ceasefire negotiations and the international community making sure it's got its ducks in a row for reopening the Strait whenever possible.
Mm. So Australia's Chief of Navy, Mark Hammond, said this week that Australian forces would be ready to contribute to any international effort to reopen the Strait. Is that on the cards?
I don't think so. So Vice Admiral Mark Hammond is the incoming Chief of Defence. At the moment, he's the head of Navy. He'll move into the top job in July. He made the point, as his appointment was announced by Anthony Albanese and the Defence Minister Richard Marles on Monday, that there hasn't been a request to Australia to be part of the American effort on the Strait of Hormuz, and if a request did come, it would be a matter for the government. Now, that language is important because it matches the current Chief of Defence, Admiral David Johnson's comments. He will be Hammond's predecessor in the job, and he said last week that the Navy was ready to go if there was a request, that they had full military capability, but now both of them have noted that no such request has happened. And if one did come, it might be a question about Australia's strategic priorities, including in the Indo-Pacific, whether or not the government would decide to take part. It's a long way of saying I don't think it's on the cards. The US hasn't asked, and I don't think Australia wants to be militarily involved in the Strait at this point.
Tom, these talks are happening as the United States begins its own blockade on the Strait following failed negotiations with Iran, as you mentioned earlier. Government ministers would not comment over recent days about whether that US naval blockade is an escalation. What do you make of that?
As always with Donald Trump, ministers in Canberra and the PM himself are walking a very thin tightrope. They're trying not to offend the US president, trying not to put a target on their back for his attacks. Equally, they want to be a constructive international partner. They want to be part of this other project on reopening the Strait, as we've said. So while they're expressing a view from Australia that de-escalation is necessary, that hostilities should come to an end, the Strait should be reopened, they're trying to have a foot in both camps, really. So the language is very careful. It's very political and calculated. And I think it must be frustrating for the PM and for some of the ministers, because I presume they would like to tell Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu to get their act together, get this conflict sorted out, and agree on a lasting peace, given the geopolitical and economic disruption that the war in Iran is having. But there are a lot of considerations at play, and underlying all these things is the fact that the US is Australia's longest lasting and most important defence and foreign policy partner.
Mm. I want to talk about those considerations because you recently wrote a piece titled "Weasel Words Won't Do. In the Trump Era, Australians Need a PM to Speak More Clearly and More Often." What was the motivation behind writing that piece now?
Well, the background is that Admiral Johnson had given some comments to journalists about the National Defence Strategy. This week we're expecting an update. That's a two-yearly update. We're expecting the next one later in the week from Richard Marles. And I was struck by the fluency and confidence with which Admiral Johnson spoke. Obviously, he's the Chief of Defence. It's different to being the Prime Minister or the Defence Minister. But he contextualised the situation, the difficult questions that the government is facing because of this conflict and because of other shifts that it's having, including relating to China and the Indo-Pacific. And I was struck that it was a lot more substantial than what we've heard from some ministers in the government and from the PM himself at times. So I thought it was something that more Australians should hear. And the point of the piece was to kind of highlight that the language from the government is incomplete and sometimes unsatisfying.
Mm. There would be many Australians who have felt that way about the government's language over the last 2 years, even on Gaza. You wrote that instead of cynical jibber-jabber so frequently offered up by politicians, explaining Australia's position on the war with clarity and nuance is the least voters should expect from Albanese and Labor. What is stopping the government from doing that? Why are Australians being offered up, as you describe it, cynical jibber-jabber?
There's a few layers to it. I think the first thing is that political language is usually constrained and it's often a little bit hollow. It's often risk-averse, and that's what's going on with the Trump factor here. They don't want to get out ahead of international partners. They don't want to criticise Trump too strongly for fear of incurring his wrath. But the other thing is that this is a dynamic situation moving pretty quickly. You know, we wake up every morning and there's been significant developments overnight. The government's having that same live experience. Every time they say something, events can catch up pretty quickly. And politicians don't want to be on the wrong side of things. So instead of making a full statement, they'll go half measure and kind of keep their options open. And I find that frustrating, and I think a lot of people around the country find that frustrating as well. These decisions are being made in our name. Our involvement in a conflict, or indeed our willingness to sit out a conflict, reflects on us as a country, and it's the government's actions on behalf of voters. So the point that I was making was people want to understand the decisions that are being made in Canberra. They want to understand how this war is going to affect us and what our involvement means. And the government should give us a bit more of an explanation, some of the nuance that I thought Admiral Johnson made clear in his briefing.
Mm. You talk about how the government is, like us, responding to the United States and Donald Trump in real time. Last week, Donald Trump made the violent and, as many have described, genocidal threat of ending a whole civilization. Could you take us through how the Albanese government responded to those extraordinary comments?
Yeah, the PM said that they were inappropriate. And I think that was an example of some criticism of the US president, some messaging to Donald Trump from Australia. We've seen a little bit of that throughout this war. But it was careful. You know, a lot of other leaders around the world went a bit further, called on the US president to withdraw those comments and to reflect on the power in his office, the power in his position. But I don't think Trump operates like previous presidents. He doesn't operate like other world leaders. And frankly, I don't think he fully understands the gravity of what he says and the words that he uses to say them. He's certainly not concerned with international law. He said that plainly. And I think that means that the calculations of diplomats and politicians around the world, including in Australia, are very different to previous eras. And Trump's position changes every day, so it's exceedingly complex.
Iran has a population of 90 million people. Do you think Anthony Albanese's comments met the gravity of the moment?
I think he could have gone further. I think, as you say, the implication of that kind of comment is huge and would be a significant loss of life, a significant escalation in the fighting, all of the things that the international community does not want. But the realpolitik of this gets in the way, as is often the case. And I think world leaders kind of kept their powder a little bit dry because they need to keep engaging with Donald Trump. They need to keep having influence with him. And if there's one thing that drives his temper and his mercurial nature, it's criticism. He makes people a target if they speak out against him. So there's a kind of half and half going on. And look, that means that the response to such a comment about, you know, wiping a civilization off the earth or bombing people back to the Stone Age, seemingly trivializing huge loss of life and destruction, is unsatisfactory.
Tom, Israel unleashed a massive round of attacks, 100 in a 10-minute window on Lebanon in the hours after a ceasefire was agreed to between the US and Iran. Anthony Albanese was recently asked by a journalist from the multicultural broadcaster SBS if he had a message for the thousands of Lebanese Australians who are grieving from those deadly Israeli attacks on Lebanon. And he responded by saying that the loss of innocent life is regrettable before pivoting and talking about the global impact on fuel. On a post shared by SBS online, people in the comments described the Prime Minister's response as weak, avoidant, milquetoast, a waffle answer, lackluster, generic. I wonder, is that an example of some of that language that you've been critical of the jibber-jabber that you described?
I was surprised that he didn't have more to say about Lebanon in that moment. We've said many times that he's a cautious communicator and a cautious decision maker. I thought that he could have said more about the Lebanese community here in Australia being as strong and as large as it is. He has said previously that the government believes that the ceasefire, fledgling as it is, should apply to Israel's fighting in southern Lebanon. And I think he couldn't be accused of being inconsistent in that. But I thought it was a moment to speak to people who are concerned about that aspect of the conflict and who are concerned about the safety of Australian citizens, family members, loved ones who live in that part of the world. Lebanon is a challenging one for the government. And when there is this fighting, as has happened, you know, sporadically over recent decades, it's always a difficult consular challenge for our diplomats there. So, I was surprised he didn't have more to say, and I'm not surprised that people, particularly on social media, would call him out. I suspect that when he's asked about Lebanon in the future, he might have a fuller answer.
Mm. Tom, how much does the Albanese government risk eroding its own credibility, its own standing, if it does not respond in a way that meets the moment? For example, the Albanese government would not be drawn on whether the bombing of civilian infrastructure in Iran constitutes a war crime. We know at the start of this conflict 6 weeks ago, the government backed the initial strikes, which legal experts described as illegal. At each of these moments, is the government eroding its own credibility?
I think this has been a problem for Labor, even going as far back as the October 7 attacks in Israel and the fighting in Gaza. A lot of people have been critical that the government hasn't spoken up for international law and for human rights enough and hasn't pushed back enough on the United States and on Israel. I think it does have a credibility cost for them. I think in the minds of some people, Labor is being compliant to the United States and to Trump in a way that really frustrates some Australians, people who think that America has too much influence over our foreign policy and our defence settings and would like to see us stand up more and create a new path to a more independent foreign policy. But as you say, Noor, in the first instance, a lot of people who are concerned about international law and about human rights think that the government has been missing in action on calling out what are being described as clear breaches of those things.
We'll be right back.